Morning, Your Honor. My name is Robert Jaskowski. I appear here this morning on behalf of the estate of Kamoni Slade and his parents, Ronald and Sharama Slade. The case that brings us here this morning arises as a result of Mr. Slade's tragic drowning death on June 14, 2010. At the time, Kamoni was 12 years old and a student at Roosevelt Middle School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And during a field trip that had been organized and planned by the administrators at his school, specifically the principal, Linda Estes, and the vice principal, Mary Beth Gauze, he drowned based upon the allegations contained in the complaint.
So let me ask you this question, Mr. Jaskowski. Do you take issue with the elements that we set out in the King case, King against East St. Louis School District, for the state-created danger?
I do not, Your Honor.
Affirmative acts, proximate cause, and shock the conscience.
Correct.
Right?
I do not take issue.
Shock the conscience.
Well, see, that's what I want to get to, because even if we were to agree with you that creating this field trip and so on and sending this ridiculous permission slip that talked about playing in the water was an affirmative act and that was the proximate cause of his drowning, what I see here is at most, it seems reckless, to leave kids without knowing how well they can swim. It's a lake. It seems terrible, but I can't say, shock the conscience? What do you think that means?
Well, I think the case law establishes the standard, and I believe one of the elements is you have to examine the amount of deliberation that was put into the decision with regard to the planning of the field trip.
Well, but no, I don't know. The failure to protect. So they do send this thing home, and the assistant principal who comes along on the trip, assigns Mr. Pitta to watch the kids. Maybe not the best choice, since he doesn't seem to have known what to do either, and informed them quite erroneously that it was okay to be in chest deep in the water. So she assigns somebody, he's there, they rush into the water. What is it about their acts, aside from the fact that the outcome was so horrible, that shocks the conscience?
I think you need to go back to the decision-making process with regard to the planning of the trip and analyze it from the vantage point of their state of knowledge at that time. And I think it's a deliberate indifference standard. And I think that requires, number one, an assessment as to whether when they planned this trip, they understood that there was a serious risk of harm that could arise as a result of the manner in which they planned the trip.
Well, that's true of the trip there, too. Busing them from one place to the other exposes them to a horrible crash or drunk driver, what have you. Water is dangerous, but it's really nothing outside the ordinary danger that children face.
The Red Cross recognizes, and we cited this to the circuit court, or to the district court, that any time you put children in a natural body of water without a lifeguard, you should consider it significantly unsafe. This is a situation in which they had 90 kids, under circumstances where they had a natural body of water, no idea of the depth other than Ms. Gauze knew in the area in which the kids will swim, it will be over their heads, no idea of the current, no idea of the terrain of the bottom of the lake area, and of the potential that you could have 90 children.
It's a large lake?
Your Honor, I can't answer that question. It's not Lake Michigan, but it's not a small body of water. There's a designated swimming area. Ms. Gauze understood at the time that the designated swimming area involved depths over the head of the children. It's not like a scenario where you would take two or three kids that you're familiar with. I take my kids out to the lake. You know their swimming capabilities. You're right there. You understand what you're dealing with. They placed the potential, at least.
Did Slade know how to swim? There's something about his. Was he swimming in the morning, or was he just playing in the water, had he had swimming lessons, or?
There is no record right now. It's not part of the record, Your Honor. The information I have is that he had the basics of swimming. He was not an advanced swimmer by any stretch of the imagination. He was your typical 12-year-old.
There's no showing that he was disabled in any way or of less than average maturity or intelligence or capability.
No, Your Honor.
What happened to him? Do we know? I mean, why did he drown?
There's a change. I believe
I understand he was over. He was over his head, but if he could swim, that's no problem.
It's the panic. And that's the reason why you have...
He panicked.
He absolutely panicked, Judge. And that's the reason why the 90 students is significant. That morning, they had 46, half of the crowd, 46 kids in the water. They're lucky it was only one child that drowned. And this is a risk that they clearly understood on the basis of the procedures instituted by the Milwaukee Public School District. It's not that the procedures form the basis for the constitutional claim. I'm not arguing that. But it absolutely put them on notice of the serious nature of the risk. This was absolutely prohibited. Not because, obviously, any swimming activity presents some danger, but swimming activities with a multitude of students, which is what you're dealing with here, a natural body of water with no knowledge of the circumstances, it's a recipe for disaster. It is shocking.
You have such a strong case for negligence. What obstacle would there be to trying the case in a state court? I mean,
doesn't Wisconsin have some laws that exculpate people who take kids to... for lifeguard negligence, for nonprofit employers, for death in pools?
I don't know the status of the immunities, Your Honor. There are immunities in the state of Wisconsin.
Recreational use statute, which I thought had made the policy decision that state law was not going to be available.
In this context, recreational use and its application, it has not been raised as an issue in this case, Your Honor, and I don't know its application. I know generally of the recreational use statute. I think it applies to property owners who open up their property for recreational use. In the context of this case, it would not apply to the school district. It may apply to a private lake.
Right. So
would it apply to the...
So assuming there are no immunities... Why doesn't a case like this belong in state court?
First off, Your Honor, because in my view of the facts in this case, I think it's a shocking case. It does shock the conscience.
I know, but of course we have that's a familiar feature of general tort law. Might get punitive damages, for example. But why isn't it? I mean, I think you have a good case, but. I don't see why it should be a federal. I don't see any inadequate. I mean, we do. You know, when you have suits against police officers, for example, you often encounter immunity problems or prejudice by the judges. You know, elected judges siding with police. But I don't see anything that would justify. I mean, I realize, you know, attorney's fees is a factor, but I don't see any real justification for having a case like this in federal rather than state court.
Your Honor, in a true constitutional deprivation case like Payne, the same argument could be made. I'm sure there are state court remedies. But the attorneys...
No, but that was a case where the police officers would have been the defendants. And there is this concern in a system of elected judges that there's a tendency to side with the police, law enforcement, and so on. That's just a practical problem. But I don't see that in a case like this.
Well, the reason why we brought the federal claim, Judge, is because there's the Constitution has a negative prohibition. The state is not allowed to deprive a person of life.
This is a very difficult federal case for you, the questions you've received. But it seems like a really easy state tort suit, right?
And again, Your Honor, that's true.
Supplemental claims?
Pardon me?
Were there supplemental claims?
There were supplemental claims that are filed. Those claims, Your Honor, are capped at $50,000 in the state of Wisconsin per claimant.
Really?
Yes. I mean, there is. I'm not going to mislead the court. There's a practical implication with regard to achieving justice for my client here.
$50,000 for wrongful death?
$50,000 per claimant for claims against a state actor in the state of Wisconsin. So this is a claim. Pardon me?
So there is an immunity.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a cap. It's, there is also an immunity. There's also an immunity.
In a loose sense. There, I didn't realize there was this cap.
There is an immunity also, Your Honor, for discretionary acts. Is this a ministerial duty? Is it discretionary? That's an immunity. There is a cap on the amount of recovery. If we succeed in a tort claim here, the maximum recovery for this family is $50,000 for the death of the child and the parents each 50. It's a $150,000 capped case. So as their advocate, there is a practical consideration. But also, I'm very cognizant of the standards for the federal law. I don't bring these cases not believing that there's merit. I do believe that there's merit because this is conduct that is shocking when you look at the decision-making process at the time they organized this field trip. They're aware of their own standards and procedures. And the reason I've got rebuttal time, Your Honor, I'd like to take up a couple minutes.
Yeah, of course. Why don't you reserve the rest of your time?
Okay.
Mr. Smokowitz?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. To address, first of all...
I don't understand this shock. Where did this shock... This is from the old Rochin case of Frankfurt. What is this doing? Well, it doesn't mean anything. I don't get it.
I'm not certain that...
Yeah, I thought we had a simple principle. This goes back before Duchesne. You know, we said if prison guards put you in a snake pit, it's not a defense that it was the snakes that killed you rather than the guards. That is the simple case. What do you have to talk about? Why do you have to bring in shock the conscience?
Your Honor, first of all, I don't think that issue was addressed by the district court below.
I think the strongest way to formulate the plaintiff's case is that the principal and assistant principal, they put the child in a position of danger by putting him. It's very dangerous to swim in natural bodies of water, lakes and rivers. It's very dangerous. This is a child. He's not some sort of skilled swimmer, although he knows the rudiments. And to have all these kids in the water and not to have a lifeguard, and that seems a little like the snake pit, right? And they are kids, so even though they have the right not to go to it, they're not being forced to go on this swimming excursion. It's very hard for kids to refuse something like that, realistically.
Especially kids of that age. I mean, it's a 12-year-old. Social pressure, if you've ever spent any time around 12-year-olds, is a very powerful force for that age group, and they're not well known for their good judgment.
I would agree, Your Honor, that the lake poses dangers. Not every portion of the lake, not to every person. I think we were generous in our descriptions. But to answer your questions directly, they didn't place him in the lake. They didn't place him in the dangerous portion of the lake.
See, this is your theory that he voluntarily, as though it was you, decided to walk out above his head. He's a kid. He's 12 years old. And without a lifeguard or anybody monitoring where the depth drops off, apparently it does someplace in this lake, it seems astonishingly reckless to me. Suppose it was the Atlantic Ocean, and you said, fine, go out and play in the waves. That'd be fine with you? Oh, he decided to play in the waves, never mind the undertow?
First of all, I think that presents a more dangerous situation in certain ways. But to answer the question with this problem, I would want to pose a couple of additional facts to the court. I think it's apparent from our brief and from the record below that this is a state park, and that the state park did not provide any lifeguard either. The implication that simply allowing children...
Makes it worse, right?
I'm sorry,
That, of course, makes it worse. The state park provided a lifeguard, the school could rely on that. What if this child weren't 12? What if he were 9? Would that alter your case?
It may. But again, Your Honor, part of it may.
Well, would you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. Part of the record indicates that in the morning activities, particularly with Ms. Goss, the one of the two defendants here and the only one who was present, she indicated to the children in the morning that they should not be below, that they should basically be in wading depth. She's not the person, Mr. Peter is no longer, there's no longer a federal claim against him. He's the person who uses this chest depth.
Sir, how is this responding to my question about the 9-year-old?
The answer to your question is this. A 9-year-old might not have any danger whatsoever, Your Honor, with his teacher standing there who is watching that the 9-year-old doesn't
go below
the knees,
constant,
deeper than the knees.
That's not a helpful answer. Holding the facts constant, Mr. Pitta is sitting there doing whatever he's doing, but it's a 9-year-old instead of a 12-year-old. Everything else is the same. Would you be making the same argument?
Yes, because they didn't require, assuming that, as in this case, they didn't require participation in this activity.
Well, so the 9-year-old... If it's an infant, and they
absolutely,
they put an infant down by the water and stand back, and
see
he
crawls on
see
in.
See what happens.
Absolutely, I would agree with all of the judges here that that's a very different case. But the point is placing the child in that location.
At what point is it at all meaningful to say that a clear decision was made on the part of the child? I actually think the 9-year-old. I thought that would have been a fairly easy concession on your part, that a 9-year-old doesn't have that kind of judgment. 12 is a little harder. If the kid is 17 and a half years old, maybe you say functionally, you know, able to make the decision. But 12, you know, all your friends are out there, so you just go out there and everybody has to show how cool they are, so they go into a little more depth.
Your Honor, this accident occurred, this tragedy occurred when there were only 5 children in the water, or 6. It wasn't one of those peer pressure situations where, oh my goodness, the 40 are going in, I have to go in as well.
6 kids there can't only be peer pressure? What if it's like the 3 coolest people in the class?
There's no record indicating that, Your Honor. I think in actuality, what happened was the main activity for that morning was the swimming. And there was not supposed to be any more swimming. These are 5 or 6 kids who wandered back down there. And they were corralled, basically. Ms. Goss testified in her deposition that she was going to remove them from the water.
No, she tells Mr. Pitta to watch them. I mean, you're changing the facts.
I'm not
in the light most favorable to the party.
What I was about to say, Your Honor, she saw them, she was going to pull them out, but then she saw Mr. Pitta and said, all right, there's an adult here. As long as you're here watching them, I'll leave them in the water. So,
you know, there's a reason people take lifeguard classes, which is that being an adult who knows how to swim isn't really enough to know precisely how you conduct water safety measures.
Was Peter wearing a bathing suit?
No. Not to my knowledge.
Well,
there's no indication in the record of that, Your Honor.
It's not worth anything.
He's worth something in the sense of giving directives.
You don't swim with all your clothes on.
He's not worth it as a lifeguard, Your Honor, I agree. But he is worth as an adult giving directives, telling them not to go to a certain depth.
The kids are in the water. He's on the land. What? He's totally useless. He doesn't know the contour of the lake's floor. He has no role.
Well, I believe he has the role, as I indicated.
What could he do?
Supervision.
He's dressed. He doesn't know the contour of the lake bottom. He's totally useless. He couldn't even tell him you're going out too far, since he doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know what the bottom is like.
Well, he gave him the directive not to go to chest height or
Which
beyond chest height. That was probably a poor choice. That was too deep. But that's negligence. His other negligence there is his failure to watch them closely enough to ensure that they didn't go past that directive.
So he leaves the case because plaintiffs voluntarily dismissed him?
Yes, Your Honor.
And we don't know any further. That's just an event recorded, I guess, in the docket?
Yes, Your Honor. I think it's indicated by stipulation and order.
Okay, so we don't know why.
They chose to dismiss their federal claim against him.
Right. I'm just saying there's no record of why.
No. Discovery was taken from him and from all of the defendants. But getting back to the fact here and the reason why
what if this lake had been stocked with piranhas or something? You know, is it fine, no matter how dangerous the place is, to just say to the kids, oh, well, they'll probably be swimming somewhere else in the lake right now?
It's a state lake. Presumably it's relatively safe, particularly for adult supervision. Presumably all summer long there are adults there without a lifeguard with their children, and who have no particular lifeguard training, perhaps, and who may be of differing ages and heights and degrees
different.
Of maturity.
What I worry about here, and I know this is not quite what the case is about, but the school district did not involve the parents in the way that I think they should have been. I can't understand why this euphemistic term play in the water was used in the permission slip, and I can't understand why the parents, as Milwaukee policy apparently required, but they didn't do it, didn't ask, you know, does your child know how to swim? You know, beginner, intermediate, accomplished. You know, it's 1-9, and they're not asked that. So the parents have no idea that they're sending their kids off into this completely unsupervised situation.
Well,
did the parents know there were no lifeguards?
They were not explicitly told by the permission slip.
Play in the water,
no.
It doesn't actually sound like swimming. It sounds more like, you know, throwing a frisbee around.
And that's consistent with what Ms. Goss described as what she intended in the morning, and what she, when she personally supervised, she says she opposed
that.
But
you don't do that when you're standing chest deep. Obviously.
I agree, Your Honor. Well, you can, I suppose. There's the possibility of playing football in the water, and you get a little bit too far, and that's where you get. There are some other play activities. I'm assuming, you know, one person on top of another person's shoulders at certain depths and that sort of thing. I've seen that kind of activity. I participated in that kind of activity as a child in a lake without a lifeguard. But Judge Randa correctly decided this case, we believe, because it's consistent with the directive of Ducheney. And that's
I don't get anything out of shock the conscience. I don't get anything.
I don't believe that the element is present here, Your Honor. If the court maintains the element as a required element of showing here, I don't believe the facts of what these two defendants did.
The conscience, the decision below, the district court's decision was correct.
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe also under Ducheney it's correct because these two defendants did not create the dangerous situation.
That really depends at what point you begin the story, because once, you know, if you begin the story at the moment that he walks out into the water, maybe not. But if you begin the story at the time that they're planning this reward field trip and they choose a state park with no lifeguards and they don't tell the parents enough about what's going to go on, that's a different situation altogether.
Well, what went on here may have been unintended. I mean, I think they told the parents what they intended to do, which is to allow the children to play in the water, not necessarily to go swimming to unknown depths.
If you're a middle school teacher, shouldn't you know something about the behavior patterns of middle school-aged children?
I would expect that, Your Honor.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, so, you know, to say, oh, well, I don't know, you know, the children decided to do something different seems to me crazy.
Again, we have to focus on the two defendants here. Assuming Ms. Estes, the principal, knew anything, all she knew, because she wasn't there, was at best that there was a permission slip allowing them to play in the water. Now, as the plaintiffs have detailed in her deposition, she told Ms. Goss to take that out entirely because she didn't want them in the water. And as the court is aware...
Is there some dispute about that fact, though? I thought that was contested.
There is some dispute about that fact. But assuming the facts most favorable to the plaintiff, she knew that there was a slip saying play in the water, not swimming without a lifeguard. To get to Ms. Goss, she apparently enforced that rule at the beginning. She was not present when the drowning actually took place, when the child went under the water. Again, she may have assumed that consistent with what happened in the morning, they would be at a very shallow depth. And that apparently did not occur. I have two more things just simply to address in terms of what was raised in the beginning. That was the original location. Mothy Lake is described, and their dimensions and the like are easily findable there. It is mentioned on the internet website for the state park. So, to the curious,
how big is it?
I don't have a size, Your Honor. It's large enough so that part of the reason for the demarcation of swim area versus non-swim area is that there is boating allowed on the lake. Mm-hmm. So it's large enough to accommodate small boats. In terms of recreational immunity, that's contained in Chapter 895 of the Wisconsin statutes. I'm sorry, I don't have the specific citation before me. But counsel for the Slades correctly indicated that that applies only to individuals or entities that own or have control over a property. It was not interposed as a defense, as an affirmative defense here.
$50,000 cap.
There is a $50,000 cap under Wisconsin law for non-automobile accidents involving municipal entities, and it is per plaintiff. So in this particular situation, it would be $150,000 for the family for recovery under Wisconsin law.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smokowitz.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jaskolski, how much time does he have?
First off, Your Honor, there is no dispute, at least viewing the facts in a light most favorable to my claim, that this trip was about swimming.
I didn't hear you.
That this trip was about swimming. The teacher, Mr. Pitta, was deposed in this case and indicated he understood that was the activity that was going to go on that morning. It was the primary activity that morning. It was the enticement for these children to get good grades, which is why the argument that we didn't force this young man into the water isn't a valid argument, because we believe the evidence supports a conclusion that he was enticed into the water. Which is if the law recognizes that you cannot throw someone into a snake pit, the law surely must recognize that the state can't entice children into the snake pit. Getting to the issue that the court has discussed primarily, which is this standard of shock to conscience, I've read the case law. There is some inconsistency with regard to exactly what we're talking about. Is it recklessness? There's some case law that supports that proposition. Is it deliberate indifference? There's some case law that supports that proposition. I think the focus, though, really in the case as to whether it's shocking...
I don't think there's any difference between recklessness and deliberate indifference.
Multiplication of
unhelpful terminology.
I don't disagree, Your Honor. I think it is something more than mere negligence, and I think that's what we're dealing with in this case.
So if we looked at the third element, and we said, actually, by the time you peel away the rhetoric, it's got to be an affirmative act that creates or increases a danger. It's, of course, got to have causation. And deliberate indifference, you would say that was an accurate statement.
The King case, I think, establishes those elements. The question is, what are they talking about? First off, Your Honor, I think this is especially a fact-based inquiry that should be left to a jury. Some jurors may look at this situation and shake their heads and say, what in the world were they doing? Look at the risk they posed to these children.
In cases like this, is the term shock the conscience included in the jury instructions?
There is no specific jury instruction on the state-created danger claim. What I would imagine happens, Judge, I've never tried a case, but what I would imagine is the court looks to the case law, which incorporates deliberate indifference, and then would incorporate a deliberate indifference jury instruction. I've read it in the Eastern District. It focuses on the issue of risk of harm. And I think risk of harm is not just a question of probabilities of harm. It's not that you look at a situation and say, well, the harm was not more likely than not to occur, therefore it's not significant. I think this court in the Boehm case, B-O-I-M, versus Holy Land Foundation, went through an analysis of the issue of risk and indicated that harm can still be serious, a serious risk, if the probability of the harm is low, But the social utility of what they're engaging in, or the probability of the harm weighed against the social utility, leads one to conclude that the risk is too serious because the nature of the result is so awful. The potential result here is death of a child. I don't think you can just look at it from the vantage point of probabilities. You need to look at it from the vantage point of the social utility of the action, which is letting kids swim unsupervised, versus the potential result, which is death of the child. And under those circumstances, this poses a serious risk under the deliberate indifference standard. Because you have administrators who, number one, are dealing with not a small number of students when they make this determination. They're dealing with 90 students. Witness the fact that 46 of them were in the water at one time. In a scenario where they don't...
The trouble I have with that is if you walk that back, even in the school environment, there are some tremendous hazards, pools and such. How is an administrator to make these decisions as to whether you have an outing or as to whether you allow the children to walk by the pool? It becomes very difficult to run the school.
Well, the administration at Milwaukee Public Schools had no problem deciding how they were going to deal with that hazard, Your Honor. They instituted a mandatory rule. You don't organize this activity unless you have a lifeguard present who's trained in life-saving techniques. So I don't believe it's difficult for them to address the issue of how to handle it. And in fact, they did in this case, and that establishes their subjective knowledge, and that's what makes this case so outrageous. And you have to look at it in isolation of the decision-making process at the time that they decided to plan the trip.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Simmons. And thank you, Mr. Simmons.